This week on America Interrupted from the PBS NewsHour, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are officially the Democratic nominees for president and vice president after an unprecedented all-virtual four-day convention. So what did we learn about the candidates? And how is this party rallying voters in the middle of a pandemic? Listen and subscribe to America Interrupted wherever you get your podcasts.
We are going to make our country great again.
Donald Trump's 2016 campaign promise to make America great again
Ladies
was not a new sentiment in American politics.
Welcome.
For those who've abandoned hope, we'll restore hope and we'll welcome them into a great national crusade to make America great again.
But it was a promise that fit the political atmosphere of a divided country, and it propelled the Manhattan real estate developer to the presidency. Robert Costa of the Washington Post.
He wants to harken back to a time post-World War II where America was a different world, racially, economically. He believes that the country has lost some of its spirit from that period.
For some Americans, the post-World War II era was marred by racial and socioeconomic strife, of civil unrest and division. Donald Trump lived a much different experience. Author Gwenda Blair.
They had a chauffeur, usually black, a live-in maid. The kids were chauffeured to their private school, and they really had a semi-insulated life.
Trump's father, Fred, a politically savvy businessman, made a fortune developing low-income housing in Brooklyn and Queens.
Fred Trump told his kids, his boys, he wanted them to be killers, that they had to be winners at all costs.
My father was great. Good salesman. Good builder. He loved to build houses.
Trump patterned his life after his father, but the pressure never sat well with his older brother, Freddie, who died of alcoholism at 42. Trump's father and mother, Mary, a Scottish immigrant, were deeply influenced by the 1950s best-selling book, The Power of Positive Thinking. It was authored by their pastor, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale.
Donald Trump took that message of the power of thinking of yourself as successful and has made it into a kind of an armor plating so that if he did it, if he thought it, if he said it, it is by definition successful.
Trump kept that mantra close as he thrived at military school despite being shipped off at the age of 13.
His classmates told me that he was so competitive, he was so determined to win, that he didn't have very many friends.
In 1964, Trump enrolled at Fordham University in the Bronx. He transferred to the Wharton Business School at the University of Pennsylvania during the height of the Vietnam War. Much of America was divided between pro- and anti-war camps. But as protests rolled across his campus, the same could not be said for Trump.
Never went to a protest, never went to a demonstration. He was going to be following his father's business, and that's all he cared about.
Trump received several draft deferments that exempted him from military service.
Numerous deferments because of college, and I had a foot thing, and I had deferment for that. But it turned out that was that was a rough war.
The deferments allowed Trump to launch a real estate career in Manhattan after college with the financial backing of his father's company.
Donald Trump, from the minute that he moved to Manhattan, was interested in becoming big, known, famous.
Everybody. You've never seen such beautiful people or so many beautiful people.
Every opportunity he could possibly think of, he got his name in the paper. So he went to celebrity hangouts, he went to nightclubs. All three of his wives have been models. He wants to draw attention, he wants to look like the most successful guy in the room.
His first Manhattan real estate venture, a remake of the Grand Hyatt Hotel.
He couldn't put his name on it. He was furious about that. When he got to Trump Tower, which was his second deal, he put his name on that, and he's put his name on everything since then. And he was determined to have his name be literally prominent in New York City and to have his name in front of everyone.
But controversy around race often seemed to follow. In the 1970s, the Justice Department sued the Trump administration for racial discrimination for the second time. Kevin Magruder studies urban history at Antioch College.
They put
a code on the applications of the black applicants, basically to identify them, to set them aside.
Trump responded by countersuing the department for $100 million, claiming libel. Trump continued to rise as a cultural figure, inspiring rap and hip hop for decades with his wealth and fame. Photo ops with elite socialites and celebrities alike, including black icons. With banks eager to lend him money, Trump went on a shopping spree in the 1980s.
And in the course of events, he ended up being about $1 billion in the hole.
Many of his businesses, including three Atlantic City hotels, closed one by one, often amid bankruptcy claims and unpaid debt. Trump himself emerged relatively unscathed. In 1988, he toyed with a presidential run while selling his book, The Art of the Deal, on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
I would never want to rule it out totally because I really am tired of seeing what's happening with this country.
A year later, Trump inserted himself into one of the decade's most notorious crime cases. Five black and Latino teenagers were accused of attacking a white female jogger in Central Park. Trump stirred what quickly became a boiling pot over criminal justice and race by taking out a full-page ad in the New York Daily News.
The headline of the ad encouraged New York State to bring back the death penalty and to support the police. That had nothing to do with real estate.
Trump never apologized when the five men were exonerated.
The Central Park Five ad says that he has an understanding of racist stereotypes in the American story, because that's what that fit into. And he really rode that momentum.
Trump continued to tease presidential runs, identifying as a Republican and later as a pro-abortion Democrat.
Are you a Republican, Donald?
I'm a Republican, yes.
In many cases, I probably identify more as a Democrat.
His business image rebounded under a wildly popular primetime show.
This is a tough one. You're fired. I'm looking for The Apprentice.
In 2011, he launched another presidential bid. This time, he grabbed headlines by questioning President Barack Obama's citizenship, promoting the already discredited notion that the president was not qualified to serve.
People have birth certificates. He doesn't have a birth certificate. Now, he may have one, but there's something on that birth, maybe religion, maybe it says he's a Muslim. I don't know.
He was able to take that, quote, foreignness of a Kenyan parent and project that onto Barack Obama. And what that does is it fits into a long tradition of nativism within the United States.
Some people raise concerns, to be sure, but no one said to then Mr. Trump, you can't be part of this party if you're going to take that view.
The campaign ended early, but Trump had already carved out a place for himself in the Republican Party to launch a 2016 presidential bid.
So in 2016, Donald Trump begins his campaign by using race, this time against Latino people.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people. I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall.
He's appealing to them from that racist trope.
One pivotal moment in the 2016 race, less than a month before Election Day, a tape surfaced of Trump bragging about grabbing women by their genitals.
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the
But Russian-hacked emails from Hillary Clinton's campaign manager and other Democratic staffers dropped 30 minutes later. A bipartisan report from the Senate Intelligence Committee now says Trump allies directed the release by WikiLeaks. At the time, Trump brushed off his comments as locker room banter. Some members of his own party called for him to step down, but he refused.
This has been the entire approach of President Trump, to always deny, to go after his own accusers, to skewer them whenever possible. The fact that he was able to win election despite Access Hollywood and despite many Republicans being unsettled by that entire episode, proved to President Trump that he didn't need anybody's help or guidance, that he could have total control of the Republican Party and win the presidency, essentially, in his view, on his own.
By election night in 2016, President-elect Trump's transformation of the Republican Party was near complete. His promise to make America great again would soon be tested.
We're going to make America great again.
On the 2016 campaign trail,
we are going to drain the swamp.
The reality TV personality promised change.
Repealing and replacing Obamacare. We will terminate NAFTA.
We're building a wall.
Governing proved to be another matter. Robert Costa of the Washington Post.
This was a total outsider who comes in without any political experience, any experience in government. And he tries to be the disruptor.
In a historic move, President Trump filed for re-election on his first day in office. The campaign never ended. As protests flared across the country, he continued to stoke tensions over immigration and race at rallies.
And I've taken decisive action to keep radical Islamic terrorists the hell out of our country.
Using Twitter, he attacked opponents, fired staff, and issued new orders that eventually included directing the military to ban transgender service members. As the president clashed with Democrats in the press, he tightened his control over the Republican Party.
There is perhaps no president in modern history who has made sure that the Republican Party is always following him as much as possible, is at times in his image.
Republicans in Congress ceded power to the president at nearly every turn.
It's always a lot of fun when you win.
But they were securing conservative goals, from tax cuts to a complete remaking of the country's courts, including two Supreme Court appointments.
There's another major promise I have kept to the American people. I've nominated a fantastic justice to replace the late, great Justice Scalia. His name is Judge Neil Gorsuch.
That became the glue that kept the Trump world with the Republican world. They may not like him personally. They may be appalled by his conduct. But at the end of the day, he's coming through with policy wins for them.
In foreign policy, President Trump had success in pushing some allies, especially in Europe, to share more defense costs. He also publicly criticized their leaders and slapped them with tariffs.
Thank you very much. It's fantastic.
But with authoritarian leaders, he struck a more conciliatory tone, pursuing deals that often never materialized. China has yet to live up to the president's much-touted trade deal, but he renegotiated other trade deals that he railed against on the campaign trail, like the North American Free Trade Agreement.
I'm going to repeal it and replace it.
When it came to domestic policy, the president and his Republican-controlled Congress never repealed and replaced President Obama's signature health care law, the Affordable Care Act, as the president had campaigned on. His own party blocked the effort.
I will have Mexico pay for that wall.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
Yeah.
As for candidate Trump's promised border wall, Mexico never paid for it. Less than 5 miles of new wall has been built 3 months before the 2020 election. The president did use his executive powers to grind legal and illegal immigration to a near halt. Along the way, he continued to hammer his message.
This is a president who does not aim to unite when it comes to race. He welcomes at times division, and he sees division as a way to underscore his own political standing with his core voters.
In August 2017, white supremacists protesting the removal of a Confederate statue clashed with counter-protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Jews will not replace us!
Kevin Magruder studies race and urban history at Antioch College.
There was a Nazi element to that. It was an anti-Semitic element, too.
One self-described neo-Nazi drove his car into a crowd, killing a 26-year-old counter-protester named Heather Heyer. In his initial response, President Trump declined to outright condemn the neo-Nazis.
And you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
To suggest that those are good people from a president of a country that the Confederacy fought against, it's mind-boggling, but it's equally mind-boggling that he was able to do it and with no real consequence politically.
I've had some candid conversations with him about this, especially during that time. I've had some very candid conversations, so I do really believe his heart's in the right place.
The president struggled with other crises. A mass shooter who targeted Latinos at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, echoed the president's own rhetoric around an invasion of immigrants. He killed 23 people.
Mental illness and hatred pulls the trigger, not the gun.
While the president escalated his race-based attacks, he campaigned on investments in historically black colleges and opportunity zones in low-income areas.
He has found himself in hot water often throughout his presidency.
The president also faced a series of investigations, including a 2-year special counsel probe into whether his campaign worked with Russia to influence the 2016 election. 7 of the president's associates were convicted.
This ridiculous hoax, this witch hunt.
As the 2020 election neared, President Trump sought to dig up dirt on his political opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden. That sparked his impeachment in the House of Representatives.
His phone call with Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine was ultimately what prompted his impeachment.
I've done things wrong, but this is what the end result is.
With all but one Senate Republican behind him, President Trump avoided conviction and removal from office.
It was called no collusion, no obstruction.
As the nation's debt skyrocketed, the stock market, on an upward trend since the Obama administration, broke records with unemployment at a historic low.
Trump just needs to continue to, you know, talk up the strong, you know, U.S. economy.
The president's supporters celebrated.
He's done a phenomenal job with the economy. My stocks have never been higher.
It's just been 3 years of promises made and promises kept.
Then the country plunged into a crisis, the coronavirus pandemic. As America reeled, the president struggled to respond.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
Unemployment skyrocketed amid closures as America suddenly faced an economic and public health catastrophe.
He's seen himself as the victim of the pandemic politically.
Then came the death of George Floyd at the hands of a white police officer.
He will not have died in vain, but we cannot allow the righteous cries and peaceful protesters to be drowned out by an angry mob.
Peaceful protesters took to the streets in all 50 states, demanding racial equality. Looting also rocked some cities. On a private call with governors, the president demanded a military-like response.
You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks.
It distorted what actually happened, and it never acknowledged why they were out there to begin with, at a time when the nation needed somebody to hear those complaints.
Protesters toppled and graffitied statues, including Confederate leaders and America's founding fathers who owned enslaved people. The president defended those figures.
We must protect and preserve our history, our heritage, and our great heroes.
When you say our heritage, what he means is the heritage of white Southerners who identify with the Confederacy and its goal to break away from the United States.
The effort, seemingly a means to please his most ardent supporters, Republicans largely stood behind the president.
The legacy of President Trump's first term is an outsider who wanted to build a wall, who wanted to connect with his base and fight with every critic, but along the way got Republicans many things they wanted. It was, for many Republicans, the bargain of a lifetime, but it will have consequences for years to come.
Win or lose in November, President Trump has already remade the Republican Party in his image. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Yamiche Alcindor.